My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The days are getting shorter, but the lights couldn't be brighter. This time of year, baseball is different, and the whole world is watching. All of the clutch hits, the game-saving grabs, the plays at the plate, and the head-first slides under the tag. That's peak baseball. Experience all of the autumn action. It's postseason season. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Good afternoon. At the tone, Pacific Daylight Time will be...
It's 5 o'clock. 5 o'clock.
One step closer to my own personal hell.
This is Primetime on Sports Radio 1080 The Fan.
We expect the best. We're not afraid to break someone. Do you hear me?
Primetime is your source for the best in local, regional, and national sports.
Go ahead and clap. Mediocrity deserves applause.
Isaac Rodden.
I'm miserable. I had to get up at 10 o'clock this morning.
Jason Sakanet.
I'm a dude playing a dude disguised as another dude.
Primetime on 1080 The Fan.
All right. Welcome back. Hope you're having a nice little, what's today, Tuesday?
I'm having a great Tuesday.
Yeah,
great
Mets.
Tuesday.
Mets have just won.
One more to go.
Though this big Sucre right over there.
This series should be over. They should have had game two.
So... best of five. They're up 2-1.
Yep.
Game four will be tomorrow
in New York, and then you got to travel day 2-2-1.
Is it tomorrow?
I don't know. The schedules are all screwy.
The schedules
for
are
this.
Screwy.
Aren't they taking?
Well, the AL. We had a day off between games one and two. You guys did not.
Wednesday there is a game.
So they play again tomorrow.
Yep. Yeah, they do
play again tomorrow at 2.
And then if need be, they'll have Thursday off, and then Friday would be...
Full slate tomorrow. All four teams play, or all four series play.
All four game... Oh, no, wait. It wouldn't be all four game threes.
No, because the Guardian Tigers is game three. Yeah.
Phillies Mets is game four.
Yeah, so some game three, some
two
game
Two game
four.
Fours and two game threes.
American League game three, NL game four.
Hell yeah. That's exciting.
Hell yeah, that's good pizza.
Coming up today... what do we have for you? We're going to get into some Ohio State-Oregon talk. So that's super hot.
I don't mind talking to y'all.
We will talk to Dan Lanning, just not on Thursday.
Yeah, programming note, he moves to Friday this week.
Yeah.
We don't have a show on Thursday due to the Seahawks.
Who are coming off just, I cannot figure out what the hell happened against the Giants, but hey, welcome to the NFL.
NFL, man.
Yeah.
So Lanning Friday, we will have Dave Bartu on our show. I think he's coming on tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So we're going to get a lot of Ohio State, Oregon talk in here, and that will start here in our next segment. You have audio, everything Dan Lanning said about Ohio State last night in his presser. We also have some Chip Kelly audio we'll play for you this hour.
Yeah, you kind of forget the Chip angle. You know, he's just kind of quietly going about his business there at Ohio State, but he gets to come back to old Autzen Stadium.
Coming up tonight, we have a man killing a mountain lion, and we have another story of us overcoming our fear of snakes in a new creative way. So we'll have those items for you tonight.
Why do we need to overcome our fear of snakes? Isn't sometimes just a fear of snakes a good thing? Isn't that nature's way of just saying stay away?
I got to be honest with you. I have a major fear of snakes.
Yeah.
I don't want to overcome it.
No. I mean...
I don't care to overcome
it. My wife hates them. Even talking about them bothers her.
I wouldn't say that I have an unnatural fear of snakes. I have a healthy respect for snakes. I lived in Florida, and it was part of my day-to-day life where you have to deal with them. And like when you travel like to into the Far East, you deal with them. But why would I want to overcome fear of something that by nature wants nothing to do with me, and a lot of them can potentially kill me? I don't think there needs to be an overcoming. I just think we keep a mutually assured destruction. You stay away from me, I won't kill you. I stay away from you, you don't bite me. That's the sort of respect that I think for 46 years me and the snakes have had. And I like it that way.
So that's tonight, Club 1080. But right now, the hot 5 at 5.
Oh!
Hot topics, hot opinions.
Oh, golly, I'm hot today.
And hot air. It's time for the Hot 5 at 5.
That's hot.
The Hot 5 at 5 on Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
No, I mean it. That's very hot.
The Hot 5 at 5 with Isaac and Sue. Brought to you on The Fan by Victorico's Mexican Food. Discover Victorico's new savory menu items. Order in-store, online, or get it delivered straight to your door at victorico's.com.
That is 7 and 9.
Number five.
El Tiante. Louis Tiant has died. Former big league pitcher. Passes away at the age of 83. He was originally from Cuba. He spent time with our Portland Beavers. Matter of fact, he once said that when he was in the minors, he was treated like a dog in Charleston, South Carolina in the early 60s. Of course, racism and everything.
Yeah.
But once he moved to Portland, he had no problems.
Hey, look at us. You know, we have a bit of a checkered pass when it comes to that, so good for Portland.
So that's where he went 15-1 for the Beavers, including a no-hitter before being called up by the Indians in 1964, and he never looked back. 2,400 strikeouts, 3.3 career ERA, never made it to the Hall.
Yeah.
But they're saying that he could be considered again in 2025.
When he was lovable, you know, everyone in Boston, they just talk about how charismatic he was.
And, he was great.
Yeah.
Great mustache.
Yeah.
Great windup.
Yeah, I mean, he had so much flair.
Yes.
Louis Tiant. Can't say I knew he was still alive, but...
Yeah.
Now he's dead.
Still had the great mustache even into his 80s. Just a little more white on
there. Well, they keep trying this NHL thing. I'm not sure it'll ever catch on, but they're opening another season tonight.
Yes, they are.
Actually, today.
Well, it already happened.
Yeah, the Kraken had a matinee today.
Yeah.
Matinee letdown.
Yeah, they lost.
Yeah, if you had a
3-2.
Bad beat, if you had the over was 5.5, and it was 3-2, and St. Louis, as time expired, hit the post on an empty net.
Well, that was in the second, though.
Gambling.
Yeah, that was only in the second.
No, it was in the third period.
I'm looking at it right here.
No, they said it was an empty net. At the end of the game.
They scored all three of their goals in the second period, according to ESPN.
No. The over-under was 5.5. It was 5 goals, and at the end of the game, the Kraken had pulled their goalie, and it was a wide-open net, and the Blues guy shot it. So if you had the over, it was a gimme, and it hit the post, and then the time expired.
Apologies. So
it'll be a Van Pelt bad beat. And then tonight, we got Blackhawks, Utah Hockey Club, and then the Bruins
Come
Panthers.
On. Utah Hockey Club?
Utah Hockey
Just
Club.
Just a one-year placeholder till they actually get roll with the Yeti or whatever.
Probably the Yeti.
Puffed.
But Boston in Florida is the big one tonight, and that's almost into the second. Bruins down 2-1.
NFL rookie quarterbacks are 8-1 the last 3 weeks, and now we're going to get Drake May in on the action. The Patriots are making the switch to the rookie.
Boy, be careful with that. I don't know if you've seen any Patriots games, but Jacoby Brissett is taking a beating that I don't wish on anyone, and this is one of those, be careful rolling your rookie quarterback out there. You can get some real bad habits and start seeing ghosts.
Well, New England is 31st out of 32 in total offense.
Yeah, they're bad.
His first game will be against a Houston defense that ranks fourth in the league. Yeah. Steelers have Russell Wilson fully back in practice. No word on who will start this week. They're playing in Las Vegas.
Have you seen that this douche canoe, who is not going to start, he's their backup, he now has a new catchphrase that he's ending interviews with now. Apparently, he's now saying, win the 7th.
Like, what does that mean?
Because they've won 6 Lombardi trophies. Dude, you're the backup quarterback. Stop coming up with catchphrases. He can't help himself but be a corny douche.
Also, the Saints are expected to be without quarterback Derek Carr multiple weeks after that oblique injury suffered last night in Kansas City.
It doesn't really matter. The Saints aren't going anywhere. It was a fun 2 weeks while it lasted. And then...
NL Division Series continue tonight. Both even 1-1. Not so fast. Mets now up 2-1 on the Phillies. That's after right. A 7-2 win in New York. It was not a nail biter.
No.
A very easy W.
Mania went 7 innings, didn't give up a run.
Yeah.
The Mets have the look.
They
have the
great.
Look right now.
Dodgers Padres in San Diego later. Walker Buehler is 1-6 with a 5.36 ERA, but he gets the nod for the beat up LA staff. He will oppose Michael King.
Yeah, it kind of feels like maybe there's a collision course here with San Diego, your secondary Padres, and the Mets.
Come too far together. Stop now. Let's do it.
That's it, baby. Shut it from the rooftops.
America's number one fighting force. Son.
Number one.
My number one fan.
Number one.
Number one.
And number one, the Jets have fired coach Robert Saleh after a 2-3 start. Insiders insist it is not about his relationship with Aaron Rodgers. Rather, he just sucks, and Woody Johnson pulled the trigger, saying that they are not where they should be based on expectations. Woody Johnson coming out and owning it, saying it was entirely his decision.
Yeah, and it sounds like that's the way it went down. Front office people, the GM, everyone very surprised. Saleh was escorted out of the building, was not allowed to talk to anyone. Look,
that's weird.
I mean, Woody Johnson, it's a bad organization.
Johnson also said that he talked to Rodgers on Monday night, but they did not discuss Saleh. You buy that?
No, I
wouldn't think so. But honestly, Robert Saleh is not the problem. The Jets' defense has been pretty solid. This is an offensive thing. You know, Hackett and Rodgers are the biggest problem right now. Rodgers doesn't look good. The offense doesn't look good. I mean, and that's not on Robert Saleh. So,
To me, I thought Robert Saleh kind of sucked. And I get why Woody Johnson did that, but look, I hate to back Woody Johnson because he sucks too. So
yeah,
I think it's all just a giant bag of suck. Jeff Ulbrich, defensive coordinator, takes over in the interim.
As long as Aaron Rodgers continues to play in Nathaniel Hackett's antiquated offense, where against today's defenses, they just aren't equipped to do it, and they're running the ball 14 times and dropping back 54 times with no play action, with no shifts, with no motions, this offense is going nowhere. And so it doesn't matter whoever the head coach is. That is not what ails the Jets right now.
Victor Rico's Mexican Food brings you the Hot 5 at 5. Discover Victor Rico's new savory menu items. Order in-store, online, or delivered straight to your door at victorricos.com. Ohio State, Oregon. I don't know if you know this. They are playing this weekend.
Yes.
And we will talk about it next on The Fan. All right, now to Oregon, Ohio State. I saw where Sports Illustrated put out a list of potential celebrity guest pickers.
Oh, okay.
Because game day is going to be up at or down in Eugene.
To me, that list begins and ends with Caitlin Olsen, but that's just me.
I have a better name that I think you will get on board with.
All right.
That they mention on here. So obviously all the favorites. We know Ty Burrell.
I feel like.
Hasn't he done it already?
This is no shot at Ty Burrell. Who is greatness?
Not a duck.
He's an Oregon guy. He's a fan. Are we a little over Ty Burrell? Like, he's done on it, like
Jason Kelsey vibes.
Yeah, it's just a bit much. Like he narrated.
Let's find someone else.
Yeah, let's find someone else.
Yeah, he did the whole ducks versus them. Also, I mean, not to like pick nits here, but he went to Southern Oregon. He didn't go to the U of O. Yeah. So, I mean, maybe an alum.
Neil Everett's on the list.
Yeah, I can see that.
Joey Harrington.
Mm-hmm.
Wyndham Clark.
Oh, yeah.
Ahmad Rashad, Dan Fouts. So, you know all the names. But the one guy on here that I didn't think about that I'm like, ooh, baby, this would be awesome,
mm-hmm.
is Sam Elliott.
Yeah.
Because he went to Oregon.
Did he actually go to Oregon?
He went there in the late 60s.
Yeah, because everyone always says that he's an Oregon guy.
Well, I think he lives out in...
He went to David Douglas High School in Portland.
Yeah, he's like the legend. Like everyone's like, oh, I saw Sam Elliott and he lives here. I've never confirmed it. He's like the Yeti. There's a lot of talk about him, and yet...
He's a pretty private guy, but he does live in Oregon.
Yeah.
He's got a ranch here, but I mean, I don't know if it's full time, but at any rate, that would be rad if they roll him out there.
Hells yeah. Sam Elliott, you bring Sam Elliott out and he does a beef what's for dinner ad and then picks the ducks.
Come on. Beef stroganoff.
Ducks by 1,000.
Catalonian beef ragu.
Is it wrong that I just want him to sit out there and just do that for
barbecued beef ribs?
You're telling me that's better than anything Lee Corso has done in 20 years?
Beef Wellington.
Sabrina's already done it, right?
Correct. And she's starting the WNBA finals, she's off the table.
She's got some other things going on.
Yeah, a lot of the other Duck significant people in the NFL are playing.
Well,
so they can't.
Herbert's out.
Yeah.
Mariota's out. You know.
Hey, Mariota got some run in the Washington game.
But those
week.
Guys, I mean, that would be kind of, I mean, it's like whatever.
Yeah.
Beef brisket.
This is a big one. Bring in the heavy hitter.
Bring in the
Chateaubriand.
I mean, come on.
Bring in the brisket.
How is he not the guy if you can get him?
Yeah, I don't
know. Real steaks balsamico.
Do you think he would do it if they contacted him?
I have no idea if he
seems
even...
pretty bristly and like leave me alone type
Although
guy.
He's recently been like doing ad stuff. I know. So I feel like he's out there a little bit more now than he used to
be. Yeah, didn't he do an ad for Harris?
I don't know. I saw that he was doing some crossover, I think, with an athlete. It was like Affleck or
is
something.
Is it Gronkowski?
Maybe it is Gronk.
I think it's Gronk.
Well, he did, and here's the thing that you got to be careful with. There was an ad for the Harris Walls campaign, and it's Sam Elliott's voice, but I never know if it's AI or not, right? Like, because it's the whole ad is I'm a man and I'm voting for Harris. And, you know, because he's at this manly thing.
But could you take AI and say, make a man sound like Sam Elliott and say these things?
I listened to the ad and there was part of me where I was like, is that Sam? So
is that legal, though? I mean, don't you have to run that by
I think that's a whole new frontier.
Well,
like,
no, because it's not saying Sam Elliott. It just sounds like Sam. And so people were like, oh, my God, Sam Elliott did a presidential ad. And yet I never saw anything confirming that indeed it was Sam Elliott. You know,
Found a Sam Elliott sounding type.
That I don't know. This is the problem that we have now is when you see something like this, I never know if it's real or not.
Spicy braised beef.
Now that I know.
God.
Yeah, now I want some spicy braised beef and Sam Elliott to make my picks on College Game Day.
First
ever top five game at Autzen. That's never happened where both teams are in the top five. So that's pretty cool. Buck was saying tickets are what, a couple $150 to get in there?
I looked yesterday at all the kind of third party sites and it looks like about $250 a pop.
To get in?
To get in.
Okay.
It's not horrible.
That's not horrible.
But that's for one ticket. I don't know how much harder it is to find two good ones and all that. I mean, that's the cheapest in the whole building.
I'll take a look-see right now and see what we're dealing with.
It's possible
Steak
this
Diane.
Is
Diane.
What is it to get some Steak Diane and get into Autzen?
What is Steak Diane?
I don't know.
I think that's like, it's steak with like some sort of like sauce and mushrooms over it, like a Bernays and mushroom steak, something like that.
All right. Is it possible we have the largest crowd ever at Autzen?
It's always weird because I know they can bring in some extra seats and because when you look at the capacity of it, that's never, I mean, I know how many they can cram in there because I think, can't you squeeze 60 in there?
Yeah, you can. The highest ever was that game against Arizona State in 2011.
Yeah.
60,055. And I did see an interview with Rob Mullins who said this crowd will be as big as we let it be.
Yeah. So he can cram.
As long as the fire marshal approves.
Yeah, there was a stretch in the early 2000s where they were frequently at like 107% capacity. They were like constantly putting 3,000 more people.
Well, where
in there
do
than
they put
seats
them?
For. I think they can sell standing room tickets. So that people can be on the concourse in their designated standing areas. I don't know about adding seats specifically, but they push the envelope as much as they can.
By the way, $239 for a single, $243 for a pair, and that's without fees. So. Throw some fees on there, and you're probably $300 to get in. So just if you're thinking about going.
You said a pair is $243?
Yeah, there's a single ticket for $239 with no fees, and you can get a pair each for $243.
$500
for a pair.
Yeah.
And then you're going to get stuck with fees, which are – I don't know why more places just give me the full price. I hate when you click on it to buy it and you're like, okay, $243, it'd be $500. And then all of a sudden you look down and you're like, oh, yeah, where'd that $90 come from?
Sizzling beef.
Well,
he just makes me happy. Sizzling beef.
This pertains to nothing.
Yeah.
But I was looking at the Ducks non-conference schedules coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Have you noticed that they have actually. They've toned it down?
Well, they probably should. I mean, there's no benefit at this point to scheduling difficult games.
Well, right. And they've done that.
Yeah.
Looking at their future schedules, because I was looking at this game going, man, and of course, this Big Ten game and everything.
Sure.
But I just was looking at, God, when's the next really big game that they're going to have at Autzen after this? So I was looking at their non-con skeds, and they've thinned it out. Like, they have Oklahoma State home and home coming up here.
That's all right.
Yeah, it's fine.
Another
but that's the type of game you want because it's winnable.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, you know, you get credit for it, but it's not it's not a huge one.
And that, by the way, that same year they play Montana State.
And then they have Baylor. Well, I'm just talking about the Power 5 ones. They have Oklahoma State, Of course, Oregon State is mm-hmm. on the schedule. Yeah. Then they have Baylor home and home, and then Texas Tech all the way out in 2033. Other than that, it's all the Portland States and Boise's and Eastern Washington's.
Well, let's play the fun game, right? Let's say on the off chance you lose to Ohio State, which is not on the off chance. That's going to be a hell of a game, right? That game can go either way. And also the same thing for Ohio State, who didn't play anyone. Like, is anyone going to look at Ohio State this year and say that you played anyone tough? I mean, the best team that either one of these teams played is Boise State, so give Oregon that. But let's say you scheduled a la Michigan, Texas, right? If you're Oregon and you play Texas, as opposed to playing Idaho. You lose to Texas in a nail biter and you lose to Ohio State. That very well could eliminate you from the playoff. Like, why would you do that? Whereas now, you know, like, even if you lose to Ohio State, let's say you lose to Ohio State bad. You lose by 14, you lose by 17, and you run the table the rest of the way. Guess what? You're still in the playoff. Like, I know that the playoff was supposed to lead to hopefully more aggressive scheduling, but in actuality, if your goal is to make the playoff, actually what it does is incentivize you to play no one, because instead of having one mulligan now in your season, you basically get two of them if you're ranked high enough at the start of the year.
Yeah, so I just, you know, Mullen's paid attention to that.
Yeah.
And I think Wisely has kind of thinned the herd a little bit in the non-con. At any rate, John Wilner's stat is a good one, and it's a small sample size, but he has pointed out that Big Ten teams so far in league play are 1-8. When they travel more than two time zones.
Yeah, and that doesn't bode well for your Ohio State Buckeyes.
And, of course, Ohio State is coming over three time zones to play this game.
Well, we know in the NFL this is a big deal, right, when you're talking about travel schedules. So why wouldn't it be a big deal when you're talking about college kids?
So it's a 4:30 game out here.
Yeah.
7:30 game on their body clock.
Yep.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know if that matters, but.
Well, I mean, I look, I'll tell you what. I'd much rather this game be played at Autzen. That I would go into play in the shoe. I mean, absolutely. Like, travel is always one of those things that's tough. Tough on the body. We talk about it all the time in pro sports, going east to west. Although it is better, because we, at least in the NFL, it's easier for East Coast teams going west than West Coast teams going east.
I talked to Joey about this while you were away, and he said that is definitely a thing.
Yeah.
When you're playing in that early window back east. Yeah. But you're right. Like, the East Coast teams going west, not as much of a thing.
Yeah.
Because it's later. But that's I don't know. Wilner's kind of pointing it out as if it's already a big. Yeah. Look, it's 9 games. It's a small sample size. I don't know how much that matters, but it's something to keep an eye on, as he's pointed out early on that, you know, they're 1-8, only one win.
Yeah. Well, and you look around the league, I mean.
And the one is Indiana over UCLA.
Yeah. And UCLA is dreadful. But even like you look at like Miami, right? And Miami coming to Cal. That's about as long a trip as you can make. With the exception, unless Miami's going up to Seattle, that's as long as you're going to go.
And they had to play that game started at 8.
That was late.
11 o'clock p.m. there on their body clock that game started.
You got your ass from Miami out to Berkeley. You sat around all day. I mean, how many times have you traveled for work or for, you know, whatever, just for vacation? And do you fly 3-4 time zones? You get off the plane. The last thing that you're doing is feeling real spry.
Well, you think that contributed to them falling behind so big?
I mean,
then they woke up.
They woke up,
but that was later.
I think there's some. I'll just, you know, is it ever the reason why someone loses a game? That's impossible to know. But there is no one from player to coach that will tell you that they are interested in making a 5.5 or a 6-hour flight and getting off the plane, resting a half a day, and then going out and waiting around all day after that and going to play. No one. That is not a recipe for success, plain and simple. And it's the same thing with early games. How many times do we see a team, a really good team, get kneecapped on a Friday in college football? We used to do this all the time in the Pac-12, where we would have our best team have to go play on the road in Pullman or down in the desert on a Friday night game, and shockingly, they end up losing. And we're like, stop playing these games. And you may think that one game or one day doesn't make a difference. It does. Ask anyone that has to play on Thursday or Monday night football. When you are deep into a season and your body hurts and aches, Dan Lanning even said when you play on Friday, you basically take Monday and you eliminate it. It's gone.
Yeah, but if you...
The game doesn't exist.
But the last time they played was on Friday, so they actually have gained an extra
day. Yes, they gained an extra day.
Over Ohio State.
Yeah, and by the way, that's probably what you want to do, because you don't really need an extra day to get ready for Michigan State, who's just dreadful.
Right. Fans will be wearing black. They are encouraged to to wear black for the blackout.
Oh, or the unis. I haven't seen the unis.
Well, I haven't seen the unis either, but they put out what fans are encouraged to wear before the season even starts. They already have
they
that
put it on every season ticket.
Yeah.
Oh, so I'm assuming that the uniform release will be happening any day now, and they'll be the blacks.
All right, coming up next, everything Dan Lanning said about Ohio State and some Chip Kelly audio when we return. Here's Buckley.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
It's time for Pitch Hit and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Give the kids in your community a chance to flex their superpowers, and they could earn a trip to the national finals of the 2025 World Series presented by Capital One. So go ahead, be the one who powers their dreams, and sign up to host the local Pitch Hit and Run event. It's a free and fun way to promote baseball, softball, and your organization. To learn more, go to pitchhitrun.com.
Well, Chip Kelly, to some extent, was surrounded by turds. And he was headed towards Turdville. And so he's now at Ohio State.
To be fair, he kind of created the turds at UCLA by refusing to recruit and quiet quitting.
Just giving up on his job.
Still think that that's one of the strangest stories that didn't get covered.
I agree.
Where he just refused to recruit and said, I'm not going to do anything, fire me. And when they wouldn't because they didn't have the money, then he quit and took a job as a coordinator at Ohio State and then pretended like he just didn't want to be a head coach anymore. Okay.
Well, I mean, what do you want him to do? You want him to, like, write a big expose about that? Like, we all know what happened.
It's just weird that no one will...
He's not going to admit it.
No one will acknowledge it.
I mean, to be honest with you, I think the way he handled his job is more part and parcel with how people handle their jobs all around the country.
It's true.
You know?
Yeah. Quiet quitting is a thing. We just don't see it as a coach.
It's just shocking when it's big-time head coaches because we just think, oh, my God, how would you not love to be the head coach? You want to be the coach at UCLA?
No.
I don't blame the guy.
I don't think Deshaun Foster wants to be the coach. He's like, fine. Okay, totally. I guess.
So they did ask Chip about coming back to Eugene for this game this weekend.
Well, I didn't build a program. Rich Brooks and Mike Belotti built the program. I just kind of jumped in after Mike, but it's a special place, and I think it's great for our players. You know, a chance for them to play in one of the special places in college football. You know, they came out here a couple years ago and got to play in the Shoe. We get to go play in Autzen Stadium, and it's Autzen Stadium at that time of day. It's truly special, so I think our guys are excited. They're a really good team, you know, and I think that'll get your attention right away when you look at the film. And then I have, you know, family there. I have a brother-in-law, a sister-in-law, and three nephews. So I'll get a chance to see them. And then some of the coaches that I've coached with, Nick Eliotti, John Neal, Don Pelham, Steve Greywood, a couple of guys we've text messaged. So besides family and those coaches that I worked with, you know, that I'll get a chance to see very quickly, it's about the game. You know, and I'm fired up for our players because it is a really special place to play.
Yeah, you mentioned that time of night at Autzen.
Yeah.
Which is true. It's supposed to be a nice night.
Yeah.
So the sunset will be.
Yeah, it's a great environment for college football. I mean, the Horseshoe is great. Autzen Stadium is great. I mean, we only have, I'm trying to think, like west of the Mississippi, I think we only have two great venues for college football. You know, BYU has a really cool stadium, but you know, it's, you know, you got to play bigger games than what BYU's played over the years. Rice-Eccles is okay. The Rose Bowl is only cool when it's actually the Rose Bowl. The Coliseum in LA isn't. I really think the only two truly great must-see venues west of the Mississippi are at Husky Stadium and Autzen Stadium. And I think at a big game, those are as good as most places in the country. So yeah, I do think it's cool. And I would hope that, like, I know when Oregon gets ready to go play out at Ohio State, that's viewed as, oh my God, we're getting to play in the Shoe. And I wonder what if Ohio State has that, like if they're fired up, like, yeah, we're going to get to go play at Autzen, or if they're going to try to poo-poo it.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure they won't poo-poo it, but you know, maybe internally they're like, whatever, we play in the Shoe.
Yeah.
Like, why would we care about Awesome.
Well, be careful. That is a really tough place to go play and win.
I mean, I don't think it gets much tougher than when you're Ohio State and you have to play at the Big House.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
sure.
That's like Autzen on steroids.
Yeah.
But at the same time, yeah. I mean, maybe they come out here and are like, wow, this place is way better than I thought, or tougher than we thought.
I do think that playing, I never played at Autzen, played at Husky Stadium back when it was, you know, old Husky Stadium and it was rocking, played it at Florida State, played it at Bama, you know, Notre Dame, and played in some really hostile environments and been to plenty of games at Autzen. And I do think that a lot of times talking to different guys that have played, the West Coast stuff can sneak up on you. Like you hear the stuff, but I think until you've been in a big game environment in Seattle or down in Eugene, I do think that sneaks up, and I'll be surprised if Ohio State doesn't figure out pretty early on that this is not just, oh well, maybe you see the 60,000 and you're like, well, that's not the Big House. Be careful underestimating that environment.
Well, Michigan just went up to Seattle and
yeah they found out that place was rocking.
Yeah, it was. Here is, do you want to hear Dan Lanning?
Yeah, what do we got?
Our friend Dan Lanning. He is talking here about Chip Kelly's Ohio State offense.
Well, I think he's always done a great job of utilizing his personnel, you know, moving guys around and allowing them to do things that they do really, really well. He always finds unique ways to run the ball. I think that's, you know, one thing that he probably doesn't get enough credit for is his ability to run the ball, regardless of situation. You know, and he's at UCLA last year, they were number one rushing team in our conference, you know, for a lot of reasons. And it's because of his ability to run the ball. But he does a great job utilizing personnel, keeping on your toes, changing the tempos, creating unique formations that you've never seen on film before. So you always have to prepare for something you haven't, you know, really prepared for.
Yeah. I mean, and that's kind of the beauty of having Chip, not having to be a head coach, is he just gets to sit back there and create some things. And I promise you, much like a lot of teams do, and Dan Lanning talked about this against Michigan State.
Isn't Will Stein doing the same thing?
Yeah, they're doing the same stuff.
You have to do that.
Yes. And with Ohio State, they really haven't had to show much. And we talked to Dan Lanning, like when the Michigan State game's in hand, you know, you kind of hold some stuff back. And I'm sure both sides, but especially Ohio State, because they really haven't been tested. They haven't played a close game yet. I'm sure Chip's got a couple different wrinkles. You know, maybe situational football, red zone stuff, you know, fourth down, goal line. He'll have some wrinkles for Oregon that they haven't seen before, but ultimately that's not going to decide a game like this. This game is going to be decided, you know, up front. And I still think that's by far the biggest matchup in this game is the one weak link that we've seen from Oregon and Ohio State. If you had to look at in the entirety of the 10 games that those two teams have played, right? I think both 5-0. The only unit that really has had like a glaring stretch is the Oregon offensive line, and it's been stabilized. They don't do the rotation anymore. Feel like that's been solidified, and it's played a lot better over obviously the last couple weeks. But you know, it asks the question: is everything fixed, or was it you played some really bad fronts? I mean, Michigan State's a bad football team. Oregon State athletically can't compete with Oregon. So that is my biggest question going into this: is are the woes of the offensive line fixed? Or does Ohio State, which really does have an elite defensive line, does that come back to show some of those cracks? Because if Oregon is one-dimensional and Dylan Gabriel has to go back in obvious passing situations, it's going to be problematic. That will be a death sentence for Oregon. They cannot be – this just isn't – this as good as their receivers are, this is not a team that is meant to throw on third and long. And when you've seen them get bogged down this year with their offense, it's exactly that. Third and six plus, this is not a true drop-back team, especially against that Ohio State defense. So they have to stay on time. They have to stay ahead of the sticks. And that comes down to, can that offensive line consistently get the push and get the run game? Because remember, when they went out to Ohio State a couple years ago, what did they do? That was CJ Verdell and those guys. They just beat the brakes off of them and ran it down their throat. They've got to come out and establish the run and then let Gabriel work off that.
Well, he was mentioning Ohio State's run game and Chip running the ball. Ohio State is...
They're averaging like 7 yards a carry.
Well, they're averaging 6.3 yards per attempt. That is fifth in college football.
But their top back is 8 yards a carry, and their second back is 7.8 yards a carry.
Yeah, they're just
Anderson
it's
and, Judkins.
It's just so hard to like the. I'm going to ask Bartu this when he comes on. I don't really know what to make of the stats because the schedules are so uneven.
Yep.
You know, I don't know. I mean, obviously, Ohio State is a very good rushing team. They're the second in points per game in all of college football behind Boise State. So, obviously, they're very good. But what stats can you look at if you've played such a, easy schedule and you know, an even schedule.
Yeah.
It's just like, I don't know.
And you
I
look
know
at
what to look at.
The common, they have a common opponent in Michigan State, and it's about the same score. It was just a dominant ass beating them. Yeah. We know this. Michigan State is not anywhere in the same class as Ohio State and Oregon. And outside of that, that's why I said, if you wanted to give an advantage, I think Oregon playing at home, obviously a big advantage. But Ohio State hasn't struggled at all. Oregon has. Now, it was early, and so you would like to think that those are finished. But the other elite back and the only other elite offense that they played was Boise State. And Boise State gave them fits. Genty had a couple of the big runs, and so maybe that skews the numbers, but he still had them, even though they did a decent job of bottling him up. And I know he's the best back in the country. Ohio State's a better running game than Boise State. And so as much as I love this Oregon D line, and I think this Oregon D line has been fantastic. I think that's, if I had to pick one thing that scares me, you know, on that side of the ball, it would be that. It's the one real good rushing attack that you face. I mean, they put up, 34 points against you, and you needed some special teams help, and by a lot of it, to beat Boise State. So, you know, though, that's another little angle if you want some anxiety, if you will, if you're an Oregon fan.
We're going to wrap up at least today's version of the Ohio State-Oregon conversation next. I got a few more landing clips, and it's going to sound like just boring hyperbole.
Well, both are going to be very complimentary of the other side.
But that's kind of what this game is. It's like there really isn't anything that stands out. It's
It's
lace them up,
yep.
See who executes better, limit big plays on the other side, limit your turnovers and key penalty. Like, it's little things. We've seen good, close, hard-fought football games a billion times, and they all come down to the same things. And you can't predict that.
No.
So let's just stop with the, this might happen or that might happen, and just enjoy. Grab a beer.
Enjoy it.
And freaking enjoy this, because it doesn't get much better than Ohio State coming into Autzen Stadium.
No. And you are so right, because you can sit there and you can nitpick stuff, but, you know.
Win more one-on-one matchups, and you'll probably win the game.
Yeah.
And you'll probably lose. Is that really a hot take? You know,
And if you're looking for like a stat, Oregon in the red zone, they're 90th in the country in red zone efficiency. That won't get it done against Ohio State.
Well,
so,
here's the thing that just cracks me up, because it's like, okay, so Dillon Gabriel has 3 red zone interceptions.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that, of course, is going to be a huge talking point all week. It's giant.
Yep.
And I get why. But you want to know what's not going to happen on Saturday, and I'll take it to the bank?
That.
Yeah.
A third pick at the 1-yard line or whatever.
Yeah. He knows. He's already talked about it. I would say on that front, Tom Fornelli wrote something kind of interesting today. He's with CBS Sports, and he said he was breaking that down. And he said, you know, Gabriel, you know, he had that clavicle injury.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that we all know that Gabriel, when he runs left, he's better throwing left than running right.
Sure, makes sense as a lefty.
Yep. As a lefty, that makes sense. But he said he seems to get into some trouble looking at the film since the clavicle injury, running right, throwing right.
Yeah.
And that's, I don't know if he would ever admit that, or that's, I just thought it was an astute observation. Yeah. I don't know if it's right, but I saw him back it up with some video evidence. Like, maybe that's part of the problem with Gabriel. Yeah,
keep an eye on it.
And it's something to, something to watch. Yeah. I don't know. But I'll bet you right now, dollars to donuts, he does not throw a red zone interception next week, Saturday.
Something tells me that Mr. Lanning and Mr. Stein have had conversations with him about letting that ball go when you're inside the 20.
Yeah. All right, more hot cliche Ohio State Oregon takes coming up next on The Fan. Vancouver Ford text line. One tech says, this may be overly cliche, but to me it really seems like this game will come down to turnovers. If Oregon could play clean offensively, they should at least have a 50-50 chance to win, but they're not good enough to overcome turnovers like they had against UCLA, Michigan State, and Boise State.
I think that sounds about right.
Oh, that's sure. I mean, turnovers.
So if I gave you the turnover margin right now, you know who wins.
Yeah. I think in a game like this, and that's, by the way, that's most of football.
They say it decides like 75% of games.
75%. That's even a 1-turnover advantage. So, neither one of these teams is going to be able to, this is a really good matchup between two really elite teams. So that's not a shocker that turnovers would be the bigger one. I just comes down to first and second down success rate for me. If I had to pick one thing, that isn't, you know, turnovers or, you know, time of possession or whatever. It's just that. Being successful on first down, second down. I don't think, because when you look at Oregon's passing game, it's been really efficient, right? And Dillon Gabriel is completing, what, like 80% of his passes. But it's not necessarily a super downfield game, right? And a lot of it is Tez Johnson focused. And yeah, I mean, Stewart, and you've got some guys that can press it downfield, but for the most part, this hasn't been a super vertical passing attack. And when we've seen their offense get bogged down, it's on obvious passing situations, and they've struggled in pass protection against blitzes when it's third and long. And so to me, and when you get in those situations, it's because you don't run the ball well on first and second down. So if I had to point to one thing, is can Oregon consistently stay ahead of the chains? This is going to be by far, for both sides, the biggest test. But Ohio State saw Iowa's defense last week, and Iowa's defense is for real. Mm-hmm. And they held them to 7 points in the first half, and then they wore down in Ohio State and then ended up blitzing them and still ran the ball for over 200 yards against them. So Ohio State has seen some resistance. Oregon has not. Oregon has not seen this defense. And so if you can create situations where you have run pass options, where you can keep Ohio State guessing, where you can stay out of situations where Ohio State can blitz. Think back to Boise. When Boise was bringing blitzes, then they weren't that exotic. They were just bringing some basic twists and stunts and
Oregon
wasn't
ready for them.
And some overload stuff that Oregon really, really looked incapable of handling it. Against Oregon State and Michigan State, it wasn't really a thing because Oregon State just ran the ball at will. And so you're like, oh, well, everything's fine in pass protection. I don't know if it is because there weren't a lot of obvious passing situations. So that, to me, if you want one thing, watch first down. If you're running the ball for 4+ yards on first down, I think this could be a really successful day for Oregon's offense. If you find yourself 2nd and 9 and you find yourself 3rd and 6, that's to me where I would be nervous because I think that's where Gabriel and the receiving core may run into some problems.
Well, and piggybacking on that, I mean, I feel like we looked at the stats last night on the Ducks Roundtable show. Tez has more than double the receptions of anybody else.
And targets.
And yeah. Ohio State may bracket him.
Yes.
Someone else, for me, will have to step up besides him. Yeah. You're going to need a third offensive playmaker besides Jordan James and Tez for Gabriel to get the ball to.
They have those guys, though.
They do.
They do. They just haven't done it consistently yet.
Well, I think what Lanning mentioned this, and we'll probably ask him about it too, but he mentioned that he thinks Tez is kind of a security blanket for Gabriel. And that will have to change.
And Gabriel's had shots at Stewart and Holden over the top a couple times, especially against Boise. He had back-to-back plays where he had those guys over the top. He just missed them. I think you have to hit one of those shots. A
couple of other texts. Jordan James, the key to this game. And another one says, my biggest take on this is I love that Ohio State is now viewed as the superior team. 3-point favorite or 4-point favorite, whereas the start of the year it was a toss-up.
That doesn't have any.
I think that's the edge Oregon needs. a little harder preparation. After the lackluster start, I hate when we get complacent. So for that reason, I feel okay as a Duck fan going into this game.
So because we've played kind of bad, we're going to take this week a little more serious?
I can assure you that neither side.
Well, that's more of a fan viewpoint. It makes him feel better about that, about the game.
Oh, there's all kinds of mental fan gymnastics that can be done like
but that,
for sure.
I mean, that's one of those things that does not matter in a game,
but
it makes a fan feel better about a game. It also is the type of attitude that leads someone to bet on a game. And boy, I got to tell you, dude, if you made me place a bet on this game, I still don't know what I would do.
It's the under for me. If I had to bet on it, I would take the, if you're taking Ohio State, Oregon over or under, it's the under for me.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I probably won't touch this. If you made me pick,
I don't know how you could be sure either side.
You can't.
That's what I'm saying. There's no like.
We don't have enough data points.
This isn't glaring.
For the opponents they've played. We just don't.
Yeah, I just would. I think there's a slight advantage Ohio State simply because I just think that they played more consistent, and that means nothing if Oregon plays their best game. If Oregon plays their best game, and they don't have to play an A+ game, but if Oregon plays a clean game, Oregon can beat anybody. And at home, that's a big advantage. I just I got to go with the team that week in and week out has shown me consistency and doesn't really have anything that I can point to and say, hey, circle this. And maybe Oregon, because their talent and their speed and all of that, maybe they expose some things in Ohio State, whereas Oregon has shown some cracks. Not recently. Maybe some of the turnovers and, you know, the second half, they've bogged down a little bit after some big leads. But again, there's some things you can kind of circle there. And for that reason alone, maybe I'd go with I'm going to lean towards Ohio State. But like I said, I think this is kind of a coin flip. It's a coin flip game.
Do you want more Dan Lanning?
Yeah. What do we got?
I've got two more and then we're out of here. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're not out of here. We're going to the club. We're cutting into club time.
Oh, yeah. Look at us.
You know what? I'm going to cook on your grill.
Lanning, he is cooking on our grill. He's cutting into club time.
God bless America.
So two more clips. This is him on the Ohio State wide receivers, really good.
Yeah.
The kid, 17-year-old kid, Smith.
Yep.
He basically catches balls with one arm.
Some people think he's the best player in college football.
Yeah, stop, go. You know, they can catch the ball and they can turn it into a big play right away. You know, it's not necessarily always average depth of target. It's way down the field. It's their ability to catch it in space and get vertical. They block really, really well in the perimeter. And those guys have big catch radiuses. So you see them win on balls that you would call 50-50 balls. A lot of times they win on contested balls. So do a really good job there.
The old catch radius.
Yeah.
And finally, Dan Lanning on the Ohio State defense.
Yeah, it starts with them, you know, they limit explosive plays, right? They do a great job of keeping the ball in front of them. They play really physical in the front. You know, they're able to stop the run. They're really sound and aggressive at times in coverage, but, you know, they pitch a lot of different looks at you as well. But it starts, they eliminate explosive plays. They play really sound football. They have good overlap in their defense. They're able to change the picture up. They have, you know, really good D linemen, good edges, and then they're able to cover, you know, outside. So they create a lot of challenges there.
Okay.
Yeah. Both really, can I summarize? Both teams really, really good.
Yeah.
And NFL dudes across the board.
We will talk to Dan Lanning this week on Friday, not Thursday.
Yeah.
Friday.
I'm sure he'll give us all the detailed answers that we are.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I'm a little worried about this one this week.
It's going to be short.
He's not going to want to joke around with us.
No. Maybe we ask him about the green highlighter. You know, he said he was going red and blue. He went green.
He's going to be all
blue. Red and green, very Christmassy.
Red and green.
Well, he said he likes black.
He said he specifically doesn't like black because it matches what's on his sheet. So he just wants two different colors.
He wanted red and blue, and he ended up with red and green.
But he also says that he has to go hunt for them, which I feel is a big hole in Oregon's game.
Yeah,
find the Sharpie guy.
Yeah,
the man the Sharpies
that
he needs.
If things don't pan out the way we expect or want them to on Saturday, I think we have to ask Sharpie questions.
We do. We'll ask the tough ones.
Yeah, we will. We'll get to the bottom.
Maybe we'll just send him a case of Sharpies.
Well, Dusty's down there. What? Dusty's on the sidelines. What the hell, fan man?
Oh, maybe you guys could put together a little care package and have Dusty bring it to him. There, like, to Coach Lanning from Isaac and Sue. Here, your Sharpies.
It's like Sharpies and like a Werther's original. Here's some ribbon candy for you.
All right, we got to move on to the club. There's Ohio State Oregon talk. Far too early, because we'll do it tomorrow too,
and the next day.
Not the next day.
Oh yeah, no,
we're not on Thursday.
But Friday.
So Club 1080 is next. Overcoming a fear of snakes through what now?
I got dead body news, too.
And dead body news on the fan.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
This time of year, the gear means more. The logo has a season of grit stitched in. The hat brims go low. The jerseys blaze with postseason pride. It's postseason season. This is what players and fans wear to win. Visit MLBShop.com for your favorite team gear and today's special offer. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.